And hopefully we can. Ed can now speak. Ed, are you there?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you now.
Oh,
Come on,
perfect. There
mate.
we
Come
go.
on.
I'm showing my age there. Sorry about
There we go, see.
that.
You're bucking the view of what, you know, the youth are supposed to be good at these things.
I'm just trying to make you two look better. That's the whole purpose of me being here.
Yeah.
I'll take that.
The doddering old blokes is what he's trying to say, Rich.
Very, very true. Well, as I said, what the plan is first time I've done one of these where we're talking CPFC. So we'll just have a little bit of a look back and a chat about the game last night. And I'm going to get, you know, you guys are the experts. You're there every single week. You see Palace every single week. So I wanted to get your thoughts on it. And I guess let's start. I mean, people will know the story of the game, I'm sure. So I don't probably need to go into that. But the interesting thing is that, you know, Palace are the sort of comeback kings in the Premier League this season. 9 points from losing positions, more than any other side. Won their last three where they've conceded first. I mean, I'll start with you first, Selzy, and then go on to Ed to get your views. But I guess it's a good habit to have being able to win from coming behind, but you don't want to be doing it too often in the Premier League.
No, that's for sure. It's, you know, great credit to everybody involved, from the players to the staff, that they've shown the sort of character and the ability to turn games around. I mean, we've ended up last night with a victory in a very, very, very tight game, I think, which, in all honesty, if it had ended up all square and the stats kind of back that up a little bit, I don't think anyone could have complained. But that, you know, when you've got these players like Wilfred and Michael Olyse and Eberechi Eze, they can make the difference sometimes in these very tight encounters. And all three of them played a huge part last night in doing that. And they're a handful for any team to come up against. So you've always got a chance when you've got this quality at your disposal. I mean, the other side of it is that I think we dropped something like 10 points from winning positions, perversely, in the sense that we're so good at coming back in that to that point. But you know, perhaps when we're in front, we've got to manage the games better too. But I think the nature of the games, because of the way Palace A are set up, and the fact that they don't have a big goal scorer, I think will be very tight, and there'll be quite a lot of seesaw encounters throughout the season. And it was great to come out on the right side of it last night. But yeah, a very hard-earned 3 points.
Yeah, and I was going to ask Ed, I mean, in the first half in particular, it didn't quite click for Palace, did it? I mean, we'll talk about Wilf because, I mean, he was one of the standout performers, if not the standout performer last night. But obviously, initially out on the left, and I don't know, the first half, it was a bit of a grind, wasn't it, really? There wasn't the same kind of cohesion there was in the second half. What did you make of it?
No, it was kind of, it's been a problem kind of throughout Vieira's time. It's just a lack of ruthlessness, or a kind of lack of clinical pass, or even frightened to take shot maybe sometimes. I thought, you know, Palace kind of started the game well. Decore has that effort from distance, and I think it looked like Jose Sarr got a touch on it, but it wasn't necessarily. I haven't particularly enjoyed. You know, last season was so enjoyable to watch, kind of the way Palace played. I don't think we particularly started this season fantastically well. You go to Liverpool, you go to Manchester City, and you take the lead, and you're kind of disappointed that maybe, okay, you're not destined to pick up points there, but that you haven't seen out the game, and that you haven't, you know, showed enough game management to pick up all 3 points. I thought last night, once Zaha went through the middle, Palace looked like a completely different team. It gave more space to Edouard and to Olise and for Eze, and it completely changed the outlook of the game.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, as you say, it was the sort of switch of formation was central to that, particularly with Wilf going through the middle. And I mean, he's a player that I've seen many, many times. Saw him when he first came through. Obviously, different role he played then when he came through. I mean, I don't know what you'd say, Selzy. I mean, I know you're a massive admirer, and there was that brilliant sequence where he's surrounded by Wolves players and just won't let the ball go, and it ends up with Edouard with the overhead kick going just wide, which would have been a great goal. But so often he's been the player that's taken games by the scruff of the neck for Palace, isn't he?
Yeah, last night was no exception. I was talking to to my guest actually at the game last night, and when he did that, saying that it took me back to him starting out as a youth team player for us in those days when I was there. And he used to have this amazing skill or trick, and I don't see it so much these days, but some of the listeners might be remembering this from his sort of early Championship days, perhaps with Palace, where he had this ability to take the ball to the byline. There'd be no room to get by the defender or get a cross in. And all of a sudden, he'd managed to wriggle around on the line and keep the ball in play and get past the fella. And you could never understand. And today, I still don't know how he does it. But he is a such an important player. I mean, stating the obvious for Palace. But I think the difference last night, Rich, in terms of the goals and the second half, was just probably the tempo that Palace played at. In the second half, they really, you know, stepped up a gear, really. And I, to be honest, I didn't think the first half was poor at all. I thought we played some quite nice stuff at times, but struggled really to turn it into proper chances. Ed mentioned the one that Jose Sa pushed onto the post from Cheick Doucouré. But that aside, he wasn't too troubled in the goal. And, you know, as Ed was sort of touching on there previously, some of our approach play has been good until sort of the final third or the final pass around the box, when, you know, players having a touch too many or overplaying a little bit instead of taking a risk and getting a shot off. And, you know, that's probably the difference. But, you know, I have to say, last night's game was very, very enjoyable from a spectator perspective. It was a real sort of end-to-end seesaw, rip-roaring game, you know, with both sides going hard at it to try and win. And it was far more entertaining than perhaps I anticipated. I thought, with Wolves scoring so few goals and conceding so few goals, that it might not be too open. But it was a great game of football, although I have to say I was slightly surprised and quite relieved to see Adama Traore withdrawn as early as he was in the game, given the problems that he posed.
Yeah, absolutely. In terms of with Wolf, just carrying on that topic, only Kane, Son, Tony and a guy called Haaland have scored more goals than Wolf in 2022. I think you'll probably start hearing some stuff about him soon, Selzy. But, I mean, Wolf had, I think, the most touches of any attacking player in the game, 75, six dribbles, nobody else more than two in the game. Afterwards, Patrick Vieira said that talks over his future are not an issue. I wanted to get both your thoughts on that, maybe starting with Ed, because obviously Wilf, you know, he is in the final year of his contract, and previously he probably has said that he felt he needed a new challenge. But I just wonder what you guys felt could lie in store for Palace in that situation.
I think it's a pretty daunting thought of a Crystal Palace side without Wilfried Zaha in it. You know, last season people probably had a fleeting idea that they could rely without him and that they could produce goal scoring moments and moments of magic out of nothing. But we saw when he came off against Leicester on the weekend, you know, you don't take your best player off who can create these moments of magic out of nothing. You know, we still rely on him so heavily to do this, to win 3 points in the Premier League for Palace. It should be an issue if nothing's happened as of yet, because, you know, arguably for me, he's the best ever player to play for Crystal Palace. It's I think he's flourishing as well. He's transformed himself from this jinky winger who would kind of take one or two on and put on a cross to I don't know whoever was in the box, but to this clinical and ruthless finisher. It's breathtaking, really, to see what he can do when he has the sight of goal at the moment. I wanted to ask Adam, actually. I asked him over the weekend, but I think it'd be good for the listeners to hear. Which Wilfried Zaha do you kind of prefer watching? This Wilfried Zaha who's so clinical in front of goal, or the Wilfried Zaha of yesteryear?
Probably the Wilfried Zaha of yesteryear. Which makes no sense, because obviously he's far more clinical at the moment and, you know, and has matured massively as a player. But I suppose from seeing him at such a young age and seeing him blossom and develop, I really enjoyed that sort of first spell where he was mesmeric in possession. But then you say that was still demonstrated last night, as Rich said earlier. You know, he still can do everything, really. I think he can still beat players very easily, and I think he can do more of it, to be honest, than he's doing. With regard to the contract situation, I think it's not clear-cut, but I don't think it's impossible for Palace by any means. I think that his age may work slightly in Palace's favour. He'll be, I think, 29 at the beginning of November. And so by the time he goes out of contract, he will be coming up 30, you know, next summer. So that may prevent one or two suitors offering him a mega deal over a long period. So that might just work in Palace's favour. I can't say that with any degree of certainty, but just a hunch. And I think they'll be pulling out the stops and doing everything imaginable to try and keep him here. And, you know, Wilfred is, I think, been the greatest player in the club's history and contributed so much. And there's, you know, much talk all the time from pundits in the media about he should go and play here, or he should do that, or he should be at a top six club and all of those kind of things. But there's a bit of me that thinks Wilfred thrives on being the main man and being the talisman. And I'm not sure whether he would have that same situation at a top six club. It didn't really work out at Manchester United, and his spell at Cardiff, you know, was a disaster. Really, he was a shadow of the real Wilfred Zaha. And as soon as he came home, in inverted commas, and, you know, it was just like the old days, really. He rolled back the years and everything started again, you know. And I think there's a lot. Wilfred is someone, obviously, I've known, as I said, since he was a young lad. And I think, you know, the family, the home life, the living where he does and all that will all be a factor for Wilfred in terms of, you know, he's very comfortable and happy in that sense. So I think time will tell, but, you know, I'm hopeful that the club will make a massive effort to keep him, and so they should, quite honestly.
Another player that obviously stood out, or at least did for me, was Cheick Doucouré as well. I thought, you know, booked, and I think rightfully so, in my opinion, for that tackle, which, I mean, if that goes in from the free kick, maybe it's a bigger challenge. But, I mean, second half, he makes two immaculately timed tackles as Wolves look to counter, and he has to get those right. But unfortunately, with the bookings totting up, he's now out of the Everton game. I mean, I wondered, first of all, Ed, whether you, what do you expect to happen at Everton in terms of, will it be Luka Milivojevic who will come in there?
Oh, it's interesting because Jairo Ruidoa's kind of made his way back into the fold recently from the cold. But, yeah, you expect kind of light for light, the defensive sort of replacement. I mean, Cheick Doucouré, he's not just a defensive midfielder. What he brings in his kind of short passing game is so important to the side now. It's kind of, we used to just build up from the back with Joachim Andersen playing long balls out to either Wilfred Zaha or, you know, out to someone through the middle. But to have Cheick Doucouré's ability to find someone through the lines is actually such a massive tool for Vieira's side. I would expect Luka Milivojevic to come in just because he offers that solid base that perhaps and a bit more concentration maybe than Jairo Ruidoa has in his sort of game to come in for Everton away.
Selzy, what have you made of Doucouré this season? I mean, it seems to have been a really good bit of business, a young midfielder who's only going to get better. I mean, it looks an excellent acquisition to me. I know he wasn't exactly cheap, but he wasn't expensive either by Premier League standards.
No, I've talked to James Scowcroft, who's Palace's scout for France, who I think will have initially flagged Cheick Doucouré to Dougie and the recruitment guys. And I think he started off as a number 10, Cheick Doucouré, and gradually gone sort of further back and now sits and plays this sort of number six role. I think he's been an outstanding signing, but I actually think he could also play for as one of the eights in front if required. And I would have been tempted to try that you know, in recent weeks. I mean, the midfield is a little bit of a conundrum for Palace at the moment. Without James McArthur, they're a little bit light. And obviously, the Conor Gallagher situation has been well documented. And I think Palace certainly need to reinforce in that area. But it would be interesting to see whether Doucouré was capable of playing more advanced, because it may be, if he was, it would give him the option that if the next midfielder they have to bring in is more of a six and a defensive type, the way that Patrick Vieira sets up, that might just be an easier player to go and get than a high scoring attacking midfield player. So that's an interesting one. But I think he's, as you said, he wasn't expensive in Premier League terms. And he's been an outstanding signing. He's been probably a little bit overworked at times, you know, given how brave the attacking system that Palace are operating. But, you know, interesting, you asked Ed also about Saturday and Everton and what would you do. I probably would go one step further and probably play two defensive midfield players and change shape for this game just to give us a bit more of a platform. I mean, I think Palace have two clean sheets in, was that nine games last night? Is that nine we've played or 10? I've got nine, I think. But, you know, we're going to struggle, I think, to keep clean sheets with this system. I mean, fortunately, as we've seen, we're able to turn games around when we're up against it. But, you know, I think there's probably, with this one defensive midfield player, a little bit of a lack of control in games is probably how I'd like to describe it. And it is a little bit sort of helter-skelter, which for a neutral or a fan, it's like last night. It was fantastically entertaining and great to watch. But I think you're going to come out on the wrong side of those as well as the right side sort of several times. And as I said earlier, a lot of the games are going to be in the balance. But, it's good to watch, but, you know, it comes at a price, I guess.
Yeah. And it's interesting you say, yeah, the clean sheets, yeah, you're right, Selzy, two Newcastle away and Leicester away. So two of the away games where they've come. Now, as someone that's been dabbling a bit in the FPL this season, I'm looking at the Palace fixtures, but, you know, they always look at the sort of run of games and on paper what they should be. And I mean, you have got what looks a great run up until the end of the year, haven't you, really, with the matches you've got in there. Everton away, obviously, is tricky, but Southampton at home, West Ham away, again, probably one of the tougher ones you've got. But then you've got Forest away, Fulham at home, who've been very open defensively, and Bournemouth away. It's a decent run, isn't it, Ed? I mean, when we look at the start to the season, and you've played a lot of the big clubs already, at least once this season, what are you kind of expecting heading up to, you know, when the transfer window opens?
I think you'd be pretty disappointed to lose any of them, to be honest. Palace, it's strange because Palace don't really. I completely forgot what I was going to say. Sorry about that. Palace are kind of they're competitive in every game that they play under Vieira, but it's the kind of the game management where you kind of you wonder what's really going on sometimes, especially up against the bigger teams. But last season it was maybe you thought that Palace kind of struggled against the teams below them a little bit more, and they were more competitive against the bigger teams. I think that's kind of changed around a little bit this season. And maybe we are winning these games where we're not necessarily at our best, like last night, and like against Leeds, where maybe the quality shines through a little bit more towards the end.
Well, what about you, Selzy? I mean, when you look at the fixtures, I know you'll probably turn around and say, yeah, but what looks easy on paper isn't. But I mean, you would look at form and where teams are expected to finish, and you have got what looks to be a favourable run.
Yeah, I think, let's be right about this. First of all, there's no easy games. There's no easy games in the Premier League and no easy points. And even Leicester, as disappointing as it was at the weekend in terms of performance, you know, a point away from home in the Premier League is still a good point. You know, I think we have to be realistic and see that. I do think the run of fixtures is one where Palace really do have to pick up points and should pick up points. I think the game management, as Ed's alluded to there, has been an issue really since Patrick Vieira's taken charge. But Patrick Vieira is an inexperienced football manager. And, you know, in fairness, I think it shows at times. I mean, he's clearly a good leader. He's a very nice individual. And, you know, players clearly want to come and play for him. And I think that's a big plus for Palace and a big draw. But on the other side of it, I think at times, you know, his inexperience has shown. And often I think he's made changes that were unnecessary or not necessarily beneficial. And but you can also argue that, for instance, last night, there probably wasn't a player left on the bench, you know, with the options at his disposal that really could come on and change the picture. And, you know, in fairness, you can argue a case both ways. You know, Jordan Ayew for Michael Olise, Jordan Ayew's going to hold the ball up and draw fouls and help you out in that respect. But he's not going to stretch teams in the way that Michael Olise does, who gets you up the pitch at breakneck speed. So, you know, what you gain on the swings, you might lose on the roundabouts. And the same with sort of Jean-Philippe Mateta for Edouard. You know, although he's a big physical specimen, his hold-up play isn't great and he's scruffy at times, but he is a bit of a handful to deal with. So I think, you know, Palace is certainly in need of reinforcements. And through, I mean, the bench last night had Kofi Barmer on there, Owen Goodman, a third goalkeeper, and so on. I think they have at the moment Klein, Richards, Nathan Ferguson, James McArthur, Will Hughes, Jack Butland unavailable. So six players, and the bench looked quite weak, you know, only losing six players. And that is the reality of the Premier League. You know, you're never going to have all your players fit. So that's why having that strength in depth and that 25-man squad of, you know, two players for every position and a few others is so critical, you know. And we've seen the situation, for instance, with, you know, it looked like there was a massive array of options to play right back at one stage with Kleine and Joel Ward and Nathan Ferguson and Chris Richards, and actually only one of the four of them is fit currently. So there actually is no other choice. So, you know, Palace are clearly in need of strengthening, and it's where the club really wants to go next and take the next steps in that respect, Rich, because, as we know, the Premier League prize money is around £2-2.5 million a place. And for Palace to jump up a few places with transfer fees and wages could cost them £60-70 million to do that. And so that doesn't make great financial sense. But if they want to progress and push on, I think it's important. I do think, you know, running a football club is like sort of rowing a boat upstream. If you're not moving forwards, then the current is taking you backwards because, as we've seen, everybody else is doing it. So it's a challenge for a club like Palace, but, you know, they've been in the Premier League 10 seasons now, and it's where they want to go, really. And perhaps, you know, the answer lies in the ownership with Josh Harris and David Blitzer particularly, who have been, you know, very much in the background. And, you know, obviously there was the link with Chelsea not so long ago and trying to buy a club for £2.5 billion. You know, I would call on them really to consider what they could do with Crystal Palace in South London when you see West Ham in the East and Chelsea in the West and Tottenham and Arsenal in the North. You know, could you do the same thing with Palace in the South? I think you could. You know, South London is a big, I think inside the M25 South London, you've probably got 5 million people. You've got the city itself, and then Croydon, I think, is the biggest town in Europe currently. So, you know, the catchment area is there to do it, as it would be even for Charlton. And you know, you could see in the Premier League when they were there not so long ago, you know, the crowds came And so I think there's scope for really any South London club, you know, in that sense, to grow massively with the right infrastructure. And you know, this is the challenge now for Palace after 10 years in the Premier League. Where can they go next? How can they push on?
And I suppose that's the question as well, isn't it? I mean, maybe with Ed, I don't know if you... It's not quite as easy as that, but what areas do you think we're still a few weeks away or a little bit longer than that away from the window? But what does it look like in the early weeks of the season that you think that Palace are maybe lacking positionally in terms of where do you think they maybe need a bit more, you know, a bit more reinforcements, as it were?
I'd suggest maybe I love Tyrick Mitchell. I love what he brings to the side. For where he's come through and what he's done since it's progressing through the academy, but maybe at left back a bit of extra cover. Obviously, there was big hope that kind of Teo Adaramola would step up and do well and his loan at Coventry, but that seemed to, obviously he was recalled after he only played in the EFL Cup for them. So I suggest maybe at left back to provide extra competition for Mitchell. It looks like as well teams do target him. If you watch the Chelsea game, they kept switching balls towards his left hand flank, and even last night, you know, the ball was sent towards the back post where he was marking Adama Traore and he escaped from him. I suggest that Palace obviously lack the kind of pressing midfielder that they had last season in Conor Gallagher. As Selzy mentioned, he's not irreplaceable, but someone who can bring that energy to the team, who can get the crowd going, who can kind of set the tempo for the team and carry them forward is a big miss from what they had last season. And when I mentioned earlier about, you know, perhaps not enjoying watching Palace as much as I did last season, it's because of missing that aspect. It's missing someone who can, right, set off, attack the defenders who have the ball, attack the midfielders who have the ball, press, harry, hustle, and win the ball back and set the tempo forward. You know, Patrick Vieira spoke throughout the summer about wanting experience, wanting another forward who offered him a different type of option. But I think maybe Odson Edwards kind of seized his chance in the past few weeks. You know, he was subbed off against Leicester, but arguably he was probably Palace's most dangerous player when he had, you know, he had the opportunity that Danny Ward saved well. And he looked well last night. He was linking up with the players around him. I think definitely a left-back cover is what's needed, but also a pressing midfielder who's going to set the tempo of the team. And you know, Palace probably two or three players away from pushing forward. You know, we're either 3 points off Europe or 3 points off relegation. It's just whether, as Selzy mentioned, the owners want to progress the team forward and or settle for a place that could be towards the ends of the Premier League.
Well, that probably brings us almost to a natural end, I would think, at the moment for this one. Selzy, so you're at Everton for us on Saturday. You're living the dream.
As always. No trains running, so it's perfect.
Oh, isn't there? Okay. Didn't tell me that. I need to sort your car parking spot. What are you going to do? How are you going to get there?
That's still under negotiation. Still to be decided, yes.
Okay. No, and well, we'll obviously have your takeaways on the website over the weekend. And so it's been great. Thanks ever so much for joining us. Thanks to everyone that sort of tuned in as well to listen. And I think there was some brilliant stuff there from you guys. So thanks ever so much. And we'll look to do another one very, very shortly.
Cheers.
You're most welcome, Richard. Anytime.
Thanks a lot, guys. And thanks, everyone.